Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasige. The federal court has overturned a decision by the Human Rights Tribunal and has directed it again to examine chronic underfunding of child welfare services on reserve. Native Women's Association of Canada is in distress after receiving news of major funding cuts to the organization. Kachinameku Sibindawag is all right with Ontario's decision to purchase the land to settle a dispute over mineral exploration. And New Hawk Hereditary Chief explains why his community pulled out of the hearings into Enbridge's Northern Gateway pipeline. And First Nation and municipal leaders in northwestern Ontario have partnered up to ensure Ring of Fire-related resource development opportunities stay in the region. All these stories plus great tunes all coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. The First Nations Child and Family Caring Society and Assembly of First Nations are celebrating their court victory. The federal court has struck down a decision by the Human Rights Tribunal on the chronic underfunding of First Nations child welfare services. Sydney Blackstock is the executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society, and she's happy with the court's decision.
I'm overjoyed for First Nations children, and I'm also overjoyed for First Nations citizens, because what was at stake here is whether or not the federal government could be held accountable under human rights law for any inequality that existed on reserve relating to their funding policies and procedures. And the Justice McTavish said clearly from the federal court, yes, they can. And yes, they will in the case of First Nations children in child welfare system.
Blackstock says she'll be waiting to hear the response from the federal government.
I'm also going to be standing in wait to see what the federal government does. I mean, to my knowledge, they haven't even issued a response to this hearing ruling today. They have 30 days to appeal. If they do appeal, I think it's a real moment of reflection is called for on behalf of all Canadians. I mean, really what the federal government has been doing is fighting against the racial equality of little kids. And if they want to continue to do that, to me, that flies in the face of everything that Canada is supposed to stand for. And Canadians need to stand up and stand on for the values of fairness and justice. Because sometimes our governments make a wrong decision, and in this case, I think they're making the wrong decision. And children are paying the price.
The federal court has instructed the tribunal to begin hearings as soon as possible into the substance of the complaint. Native Women's Association of Canada is scrambling after having funding pulled for health projects. Claudette Dumont-Smith is the executive director of NWAC. She says the organization was notified April 13th by Health Canada that it would no longer be providing NWAC with program funding. She says the 100% funding cut will have a real negative effect.
Well, that means that the Native Women's Association of Canada will no longer be able to work on issues of health. And we all know that the health of Aboriginal women in this country is very, very poor. As a matter of fact, it's the poorest of all women in Canadian society. So we won't be able to do any work in that area because we don't have any funds to pursue what we were working on for the past 5 years. And the other effect is that we won't be sitting at national policy tables where, they're discussing health matters about Aboriginal people, more specifically Aboriginal women. We won't be at that table to give any input.
Dumont-Smith says they're very upset and distressed. She says NWAC will be strategizing to come up with a plan to lobby the federal government to reverse its decision to cut health funding. NWAC wasn't the only Aboriginal women's organization to face the cuts. Paktutit Inuit Women of Canada has also had their health funding pulled. The projects affected at the organization include maternal and newborn care, HIV research, midwifery, and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. 18 First Nations across the country have signed on to the Framework Agreement on the First Nations Lands Management. The agreement means the signatory First Nations are beginning a process to opt out of the Indian Act legislation relating to land and assume control over reserve land, resources, and the environment. The federal government has earmarked $20 million over 2 years to respond to the growing interest from First Nations leaders to participate in the First Nations Lands Management Act. There are now around 50 signatory First Nations. Saskatchewan First Nation is getting ready to launch its own version of the Goods and Services Tax. The tax revenues will go to the band and not Ottawa. CBC reports Nakanit First Nation near Maple Creek has received federal approval to be added to the First Nations Goods and Services Tax Act. White Dakota Nation has been charging First Nations GST for about 3 years now. And CBC also reports some First Nation leaders are opposed to the First Nation GST because they'd have to start charging it to their members, too. Nakanit First Nation Chief says the GST revenue will be collected at the Living Sky Casino in Swift Current. They're hoping to collect $20,000 a year. The tax should be in place early this summer. It was an emotional opening at the Truth and Reconciliation hearings in Victoria. The Canadian Press reports First Nations Summit Grand Chief Ed John broke down in tears during his opening remarks April 13th. John spent 7 years in a northern BC residential school. The 2 days of hearings were open to the public. First Nation and municipal leaders in northwestern Ontario have partnered up in their fight to keep the Ring of Fire-related development opportunities in the region. 6 First Nations and 4 regional mayors have signed a resolution to work together on the issues. One of these signatory First Nations is Bingui Nayashi Anishinaabeg, and Wilfred King is the spokesperson. He says this is the first time the two groups will work together on a common goal.
I think it was a historic moment because I think that for so long, First Nations and municipalities often worked in isolation and in silos, and I think this is the first time that I have witnessed that you've seen municipalities and First Nations forge a relationship based on, the common good of their communities, and that being economic development must stay in the north.
The groups want a transmission line from Cliffs North Project to be built to help bolster regional economic development as well as ensure smelting plant is built in the area and that the ore is not shipped off elsewhere to be processed. Garden Hill First Nation in Manitoba is trying to keep the money it receives from Ottawa out of the hands of a businessman. The Winnipeg Free Press reports Len Podheiser has garnished Garden Hill's account at the First Nations Bank of Canada, hoping to collect $2.7 million the band owes him after a business deal went south. The account holds money transferred from the federal government to pay for a variety of programs, including housing, welfare, education, and the band payroll. The band's financial manager says the First Nation is under third-party management and losing the money would cripple the community. The band had put up the federal source of income as security for a loan from Podheiser. The band's financial manager says Garden Hill First Nation will be in third-party management temporarily until the loan can be paid back. The chief of Kitchinimekusibininawag is satisfied with Ontario's decision to purchase the land to settle a dispute over mineral exploration. But despite that, Chief Donnie Moore says they need to sit down and talk with the province.
Well, in a way, it means we won our dispute with God's Lake Resources. But on the other hand, I don't think we should keep coming back as we did with Platniks, now God's Lake, and I think... It's giving us the direction, I guess, to follow up with Ontario that it is time to really sit down as government to government and discuss this issue so that it doesn't happen again. And I'm really happy it went this way. But on the other hand, it can't always keep happening like that.
Morris says he would like to see a meeting with the province in mid-June. The Ontario government purchased land in Kaya territory for $3.5 million late last month. The purchase was to settle a dispute with God's Lake Resources over mining exploration in the northwestern part of the province. Last year, KI community members found tents, survey tape, and other evidence of mineral exploration in an area declared off-limits to protect sacred sites. CBC reports Poundmaker Chief Dwayne Antoine and 7 other people pleaded guilty to theft under $5,000 in a North Battleford court on April 16th. They're facing allegations of misspending band and treaty land entitlement money. 3 people also pleaded guilty to 1 count over $5,000. One of the accused pleaded not guilty to charges of theft, fraud, and criminal breach of trust. All of the accused are due back in court in September for sentencing. West Bank First Nation near Kelowna wants to build a $120 million for-profit hospital on its reserve, but a constitutional expert thinks the plans will most likely be challenged. CBC also reports Chief Robert Louis says once complete, the private hospital would serve any patient willing to pay for private treatment and would operate outside of Canada's Medicare system. Gordon Christie, director of UBC's First Nations Legal Studies program, thinks the feds would challenge the private hospital in the courts to say West Bank doesn't actually enjoy the authority to plan and construct the operation. Chief Louis, meanwhile, says their self-government agreement means the band does not need approval from the province to build and run the hospital. Christie also says the issues of building a private hospital is untested waters and suspects the court will back the government. The second First Nation group has pulled out of the Enbridge Gateway Pipeline review. The Nuhoke Nation canceled its intervener status on April 12th. Charles Nelson is one of the hereditary chiefs of the Nuhoke Nation. He says there were too many things wrong with the process.
After seeing a number of things unfold and happen since we became involved, we've decided to pull out. The things included the Prime Minister making statements that the building of the Enbridge pipeline is predetermined, and also hearing Joe Oliver making statements about the our people being socially dysfunctional, speeding up the process of the joint review panel. All this is just building up, hasn't been in good faith, and they're really, the joint review panel doesn't have the mandate to consult with First Nation people, so there's a lot of things wrong with the process, so we felt that this isn't being done in a good way, so we need to pull out.
There are still 46 First Nations with intervener status. Ed John, a Grand Chief of the First Nations Summit, says Nuhoke's withdrawal from the process provides further ammunition for legal action. He also told the Globe and Mail that it lays the groundwork for a court challenge when the government does not consult with First Nations. Parental involvement in education is a contributing factor to higher than average high school graduation rates for First Nation students in PEI. CBC News reports that only 77% of First Nation students living off reserve in Canada got a diploma in 2010, according to StatsCan, and the graduation rate for PEI First Nation students is around 90%. Alan Gillis, education director of the Mi'kmaq Confederacy of PEI, told CBC he thinks one of the reasons for the island's higher than average graduation rate is many parents are more involved with their children's education. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
Broken bread.
Storyteller from Derek Miller, and that was a cut from his first CD, Music is the Medicine. The federal court has overturned a decision by the Human Rights Tribunal and has directed it to examine chronic underfunding of First Nation child welfare services. The complaint was brought forward by the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society and the Assembly of First Nations against the Government of Canada. The tribunal dismissed the complaint last March on the grounds that federal and provincial funding levels could not be compared. That decision was overturned by the federal court April 18th. Cindy Blackstock is the executive director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society.
I'm overjoyed for First Nations children, and I'm also overjoyed for First Nations citizens, because what was at stake here is whether or not the federal government could be held accountable under human rights law for any inequality that existed on reserve relating to their funding policies and procedures. And the Justice McTavish said clearly from the federal court, yes, they can. And yes, they will, in the case of First Nations children and child welfare system.
And so what does that mean for your organization?
Well, I think what it means for our organization is we're going to continue forward to the hearing on the merits. And that's what we've always wanted. We wanted First Nations children and families to have their day in court, where we can put evidence of this inequality, and most importantly, the harmful effects it has on children, before Canadians and before the courts. And I'm confident that anyone who looks at this, as many have in the past, will find that there is discrimination happening by the federal government and that it needs to stop, especially because we're talking about little children here.
Were you surprised at all by the court's ruling today?
I felt the hearing was extremely fair. I thought Justice McTavish was extremely well prepared. She asked very good questions of all parties during the hearing. I was hopeful that she would decide as she did, but one never knows with the federal court. You go there and you argue your case and you see what happens. All I can say is that I was really pleased with the care that she took in writing her decision. I think anybody who reads it will see that, every decision she made was carefully considered and backed up by law.
And so what's your next move?
Well, my next move is to move forward with the hearing on the merits and to celebrate with the First Nations and non-Aboriginal children and allies who have been such a big part of making this movement happen for equity for kids. And I'm also going to be standing in wait to see what the federal government does. I mean, to my knowledge, they haven't even issued a response to this hearing ruling today. They have 30 days to appeal. If they do appeal, I think it's a real moment of reflection is called for on behalf of all Canadians. I mean, really what the federal government has been doing is fighting against the racial equality of little kids. And if they want to continue to do that, to me, that flies in the face of everything that Canada is supposed to stand for. And Canadians need to stand up and stand on guard the values of fairness and justice. Because sometimes our governments make a wrong decision, and in this case, I think they're making the wrong decision. And children are paying the price.
That was Cindy Blackstock, Executive Director of the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society. Native Women's Association of Canada is very concerned over deep funding cuts to the organization's health department. Executive Director Claudette Dumont-Smith says Health Canada informed them late last week that there will be no more health funding for NWAC.
We received a telephone call from a Director General of Health Canada, the First Nations Inuit Health Branch, who had been funding various health projects with NWAC since 2005, and we were told on Friday that we were cut at 100%.
What's that going to affect?
Well, that means that the Native Women's Association of Canada will no longer be able to work on issues of health, and we all know that the health of Aboriginal women in this country is very, very poor. As a matter of fact, it's the poorest of all women in Canadian society, so we won't be able to do any work in that area because we don't have any funds to pursue what we were working on for the past 5 years. And the other effect is that we won't be sitting at national policy tables where, they're discussing health matters about Aboriginal people, more specifically Aboriginal women. We won't be at that table to give any input.
Can you describe some of the initiatives that are being affected right now?
Well, we had, under the Aboriginal Diabetes Initiative, we worked in that area for several years, as I mentioned. And, it was addressing diabetes, and we all know, again, that diabetes greatly affects Aboriginal people. And we also were working on Health Human Resources, which is an initiative to bring in more Aboriginal people, more specifically, I guess, youth to enter into a health career. So Native Women Association would, get their constituents together and try to, to introduce the various health careers and encourage them to enter that, to enter into any of those many careers that are available under health. So that was one area that we were very, active in. There's the early childhood development as well. About early childhood development is very important for the child to grow up, healthily and to have good self-esteem. We worked on HIV, the prevention of HIV infection. Again, HIV infection among young Aboriginal women is very high. It's increasing more than any other segment of the Canadian population. We also were touching upon the fetal alcohol syndrome and, how that can be prevented. And so there was various things that we were addressing in the past 5 years that we will no longer be able to address.
And so how will this, these cuts and these well, you're going to have to axe all these programs, obviously. And so how will Aboriginal women be directly affected by that?
Well, you know what? I think for many years, policies were made, developed, and, they were designed at the national level by non-Aboriginal people. And I think, they failed. I mean, when we look at the statistics, we see that these policies are not really relevant. So I think when you have Aboriginal women speak on policies that affect them, there's a greater success that there'll be a better outcome. So, we've only been working in this area for about 5 years, and I think, the government should have allowed us to continue our work in that area because we do sit at those tables. Because we do represent women from across Canada, we come there with that, that view, and we inform the policymakers what can and cannot work. And I think that's very, very valuable. And I think that that's just being tossed aside by the current government.
And so, what will you be doing about the cuts? Are you going to be advocating that they be brought back, or what can you do?
Well, we have received a lot of support from people from across Canada, politicians and non-politicians alike, nurses that are appalled that the government has taken this position. We just got the news on Friday. We're very upset. We're very distressed, and we've put out a press release, and we're going to be strategizing with our executive committee and with our other board members and, try to come up with a plan so that the government will reverse that decision.
That was Claudette Dumont-Smith, Executive Director of the Native Women's Association of Canada. Here's Don Amaro with Sunshine and Rain from his CD, Deepening.
Ever watch the sunrise at the break of day? Light that's falling over scares the dark away. That's how it feels when I you.
Have you ever felt spring showers wash away the mud? The air is so much sweeter when the flowers start to you.
Kitchenemakusibininawag is content, for now, with Ontario's decision to buy land in the community's traditional territory in the northwestern part of the province. Ontario bought the land for $3.5 million, essentially buying out the interests of God Lakes Resources, which was exploring in the KI traditional territory. But Chief Donnie Morris says more needs to be done to ensure the issue doesn't keep repeating itself.
Well, in a way, it means we won our dispute with God's Lake Resources, but on the other hand, I don't think we should keep coming back as we did with Platniks, now God's Lake, and I think it's giving us the direction, I guess, to follow up with Ontario that it is time to really sit down as government to government and discuss this issue so that it does not happen again. And we, in a way, I guess I should say I'm really happy it went this way, but on the other hand, it can't always keep happening like that.
And so I know you said you'd like to sit down and talk, but so what do you think should happen or should happen in the future?
Well, we've been pushing for a joint panel to discuss these outstanding issues, which is the TLE, our territory, our water declaration and our consultation protocol, and plus other issues that are being worked on at the community level. These are the things we need to sit down with government and say, you know, we're moving forward in the areas of protecting our resources for future development. And if you want to be part of it, you have to come to the table. You have to agree to how we're going to work together. There may be disagreements here and there, but that's why we're trying to request for a joint panel so talks can start now. And I'm pushing for June, middle of June, that we start discussions. So I'm be sending a letter off to them today. And last week I did a YouTube presentation requesting that meeting with the minister.
And so have you actually spoken with the province since this happened?
No, not at the moment. Our land use planning process to, I believe, we'll be reopening talks with MNR, MNDMF,
right,
and other, ministries.
And so which minister do you want to meet with?
Bartolucci and Gravel.
And so if another mining company comes in your area, what's going to happen then? Are you looking for meaningful consultation or what is it?
I think anybody can come onto our territory because I believe in the meantime, everything is government. I hope will not allow permits now. As I say, we want to be part of the process. Who should be working in our territory in the future. How it's going to be structured, that's why we need to meet with the Ontario government and let them know this is the process we want to happen. And with the consultation process, it's up to Ontario government to come talk to us, not a company, because we are working towards that possibility once we finish everything, our policies in regards to consultation. We will be opening those doors up in the future as to what it's going to look like. It's not going to be IBAs or MOUs. It'll be in the areas of taxes, I believe. That's what we're aiming for.
And so how would you like to see the a joint panel structured? Would that be comprised of community members from KI and Ontario government officials?
The joint panel would be set up for with the Lands and Environment Department and whoever the Ontario government would set up. But on the other hand, as we all know, Aboriginal governments don't have fundings for consultants, lawyers, so our direction comes from the grassroots level, which encompasses general meetings, community meetings, and elders meetings to get direction from. That's the difference between an Indian government and a provincial or federal government.
Fair enough. And I think that's everything from me, Chief. Is there anything else you'd like to say or add about this issue?
We would like to thank all the supporters that supported us, wished us well in our endeavor to try and come to a resolution, and I believe we did succeed at that, and hopefully we can take it further down the road and manage our territory in the future.
That was KI Chief Donnie Morris. The second First Nation group has pulled out of the Enbridge Gateway Pipeline Review. The New Hawk Nation canceled its intervener status as of April 12th. Charles Nelson is one of the hereditary chiefs of the New Hawk Nation.
We were involved with the, well, we anticipated being involved with the justice joint review panel, but after seeing a number of things unfold and happen since we became involved, we've decided to pull out. The things included the Prime Minister making statements that the building of the Enbridge pipeline is predetermined, and also hearing Joe Oliver making statements about the our people being socially dysfunctional, speeding up the process of the joint review panel. All this is just building up, hasn't been in good faith, and they're really, the joint review panel doesn't have the mandate to consult with First Nations people, so there's a lot of things wrong with the process, so we felt that this isn't being done in a good way, so we need to pull out. When I say we, there was a number of hereditary chiefs, a number of elders that met together, and when we sat together, we talked about it, and we decided at that meeting that to direct our elected chief and council to pull out of the process.
And that also stems from originally being opposed to the project anyway, right? So what was your opposition to it?
The opposition to it is that it's detrimental to our way of life. It's detrimental to who we are. It's detrimental to our rights and our title. It affects us. If anything happens within the waters here, the flow that happens, the winds that happens, the tides that happen, will affect our way of life. And what I mean by that is that the salmon in the ocean, the halibut in the ocean, the cod, clams, crab, herring, bulligans, all those sort of fish, and even crabs, that sort of fish that our people still depend on. That's what we call our traditional economy, that it'll affect our traditional economy. It affects that we can get those. If it affects that, can't get those, and we can't do the things that we do, like our traditional practices of feasting, potlatching, our traditional practices of trading in that, and there's about 80% of our people that are on social assistance, but I would say a good 100% of our people are still on the traditional economy, so that's really important to know that if this pipeline happens, it's going to affect our people. It's not a matter of when it's going, or if it's going to or not. It's going to be a matter of when it's going to happen. Whether it's on the land or if it's in the water, that this affects us. And the pipeline itself is one issue. The other issue is that they're going to have these super tankers coming in. When I say super tankers, they're going to be huge. They estimate them to be about 3 football fields long. So that's a huge ship. So any sort of catastrophe with one of those ships will definitely hurt our waters, our food, our the life around the waters and that.
And do you think that you'd be going for legal action against the project if that were to go ahead?
I know that people have talked about it, but definitely that's something that our people really need to sit down and think about and talk and decide, before anything like that happens.
That was Charles Nelson, New Hawk Nation Hereditary Chief. The joint panel of the National Energy Board and Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency is expected to wrap up hearings next spring, but the timeline may not go as planned since Ottawa has promised to streamline the major project review process, and Ottawa says a new process will be retroactive. Now here's In a Frenzy by Inez.
Listen, hear the people speak. Heard it now, heard it then. Heard it through my generation. So who's gonna know you? Who's gonna show you? So what you gonna do? So move, get on and do. Do what you gotta do. She calling out, she say, why can't you hear me? Falling out, her words lost in a frenzy.
Nation and municipal leaders in northwestern Ontario have partnered up in their fight to keep Ring of Fire-related development opportunities in the region. Six First Nations and four regional mayors have signed a resolution to work together on the issues. One of the signatory First Nations is Bigwe-Neashi Anishinaabeg, and Wilfred King is the spokesperson.
Basically, the resolution was really a statement by both groups of First Nations and the municipal leaders in the northern region here, basically supporting that if Cliffs Resources were going to develop the Ring of Fire site, that the processing plant had to stay in the north and at the Exton site, essentially. Secondly, the proposed route to be proposed for this development was to take into consideration Chief Eli Monias and Martin Falls First Nations' requested route for the access roads. And thirdly, basically, the there needs to be a, you know, a plan for developing the region.
And so what specifically is your community's participation or involvement in this?
This community is involved in it because we feel that we're so close to the Ring of Fire and all the development that we feel that we can, working with the Mtawa First Nations, that we can provide the necessary infrastructure because the necessary transmission lines that need to power the processing plant would transect through our traditional territory, and we do have you know, the capacity to develop this line so that the development stays in the north.
And so how else would a new transmission line benefit the communities?
Then you would get that direct access power to those communities. They would be off diesel generation. It would be more cost effective for you know, for the communities to go on to the provincial grid.
Do you think that would be like a transmission line, or would it be a merchant line going into a mining site?
Well, I think that the mining site itself would have could have its own standalone line. But in order for the line to go up to the Exton site, we would like to see you know, the communities benefit not only at the mine site or around the mine site, but all over the north. And there's a real good business case for that.
And what is that?
That the, you know, if you have so many remote communities that are dependent on diesel generation, and if they can get onto a provincial grid, the cost is just enormous in terms of savings.
And the other thing is the First Nation communities have partnered up with a couple of the municipalities, and can you speak to that, or what are your thoughts on that partnership or that support?
I think it was a historic moment because I think that for so long, you know, First Nations and municipalities often worked in isolation and in silos. And I think this is the first time that I have witnessed that you've seen municipalities and First Nations forge a relationship based on, you know, the common good of their communities, and that being economic development must stay in the north. You know, this is a huge, huge development. The First Nation communities must benefit. And in addition to that, because the municipalities, some of them are so closely related to the First Nation communities, that they would also benefit as well. And for so long, we've seen the resources extracted from the north to fuel the economies of the south. And this has to change. We have to maintain that all development in the north must stay in the north. And the biggest benefactor of those developments must be First Nation communities in the north.
That was Wilfred King, spokesperson for Bingwe Neashi Anishinaabeg. You've been listening to Bomb Siddell with Jennifer Ashwasage. Bomb Siddell is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Siddell means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombseda.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bomb Siddell. Yellow.